Welcome to the Digital Government Podcast. Tune in to discover the future of governance and ways of getting there.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Digital Government Podcast with your usual host, Federico Plantera, journalist, sociologist, and researcher, today accompanied by Catherine Nyman-Metcalf, who is an adjunct professor at the Tallinn University of Technology and also a legal expert working with eGovernance Academy, also a known voice of the Digital Government Podcast. So, Catherine, welcome back.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
We're keeping it short and sweet with the introduction because we have a lot of things to talk about today. A lot of things because today's topic is something that we have definitely heard and read a lot about. But definitely, it would be good to take stock of the situation a little bit, which is the attempt of the European Union to establish a framework for regulating the usage of artificial intelligence in the EU. What we're talking about is exactly the EU AI Act, which is a proposed regulation by the European Union that essentially is aimed at governing the use of artificial intelligence within the member states of the European Union. Why is it important and why is it not a topic, let's say, that is solely or merely related to the EU? Because in any case, it's an attempt and one of the world's first major, let's say, legal frameworks that are specifically, or better, that are being specifically designed to address challenges and opportunities presented by artificial intelligence. Artificial intelligence, which is this topic that obviously we read and hear a lot about in and for itself, but at the same time, we have to address a little bit how timely or like time-bound, let's say, not only the news and the developments that are happening, let's say, how we look at them and how we analyze them, because everything is going so fast, but then even more so, regulation. So, Catherine, I would start exactly from this point. So, a general introduction a little bit to the EU AI Act. Let's make a little bit of an overview. So, what are the main objectives and how or why is it different from other international efforts to regulate AI? Because the EU is not alone in this.
Well, you mentioned one of the things that is very important. This is one of the first sort of attempts to do it legally, meaning by law. I don't mean others do it illegally, but by law rather than by just, say, guidelines or agreements. Companies, there are quite a lot of those already, it's kind of voluntary self-regulatory instruments, but there are a few major legal acts. I believe Canada has passed a law, but I haven't actually checked if that's already passed. But generally, this is, we could say, the first major one. Why? Well, EU is a kind of a law-based organization to a large extent. One of the reasons for it is also to harmonize between member states, because everybody's looking at this issue. And there was always a danger that there might be differences between different member states if they would all go it alone. So this is one of the aims of the EU, to avoid that that could create obstacles between countries for exports, imports, etc. But also it's to protect consumers, users, people. It has less, perhaps reading the text, less of this sort of human rights focused approach than, for instance, the GDPR, the data protection regulation. It's more focused on sort of products and users. But one reason for it is still that they want to protect against all the possible negative effects. And one of the maybe the easiest ways to describe very briefly what the idea of it is this categorization of risks, of making different categories of how risky is AI, and then obviously then the regulation of it should sort of follow what's the risk, how much do we need to regulate it, and why. So this is the kind of very, very general approach of it.
And in that sense, obviously, considering that it's an act, it's a regulation, it's law, we also have to consider what is the current stage, let's say, of the approval and discussion of the EU AI Act. So at what point are we, meaning what is the current stage of discussion and approval, but also what are the key milestones ahead, let's say?
I forget exactly the different twists and turns because there are so many, but I would say we are very close to having the act adopted in this version, which now exists, that one can read this draft version, because it's gone through most of the stages of the EU decision making. And I don't think we want to go into detail here, but it's the sort of commission proposal. We have the council, the member states, basically the parliament. And as far as I've read, it's now expected to go through the very final steps in March or April, meaning, I mean, tomorrow is March already, so very, very soon. And it seems as if those differences between sort of member states, but also between the different EU organs, have been more or less ironed out. So I think we could say that we will get an act that looks pretty much like the text available. Still, why it's not so easy yet to say exactly what it means is, of course, that most legal acts we see better once they're in force, what they will really mean, because then will we have practice, but also sort of implementing rules for it, which will be at member state level. But there's also going to be this EU AI office. A decision on that was taken, I don't know if it's absolutely final, but only like last week or something. So this is sort of something which obviously doesn't exist yet. So all of those things will help us understand what it really means. And in the Act, there are different deadlines for when different parts of it come into effect. I think the longest one is maybe something like 36 months after it's entered into force. Some things starting pretty much immediately, but for most of them, the sort of concrete things that anybody needs to do, if we put it like that, are only going to happen within the next few years from when the Act enters into force, which could be quite soon. So there are these different distinctions.
I'll keep it a little bit on the metaphor, let's say, that you have used, that like tomorrow, yes, tomorrow is March, tomorrow is essentially today, but it's not only as of recent times, let's say, that we've been talking about the risks and also managing or attempting at least to categorize the risks that might come from using artificial intelligence, especially in such a, I mean, I would say also pretty heavily regulated environment like the EU it is in general as a whole, for example, as compared to some other places in the world. But one thing that then I would like to know on this is what are some of the major pros and cons, let's say, that have emerged in the debates about the Act? Because obviously there is a discussion that happens within the EU institutions, and then there are the general discussions that are happening in the society more widely as a whole. So like also on the news outlets, on the social media, social network, for example, like, I don't know, Twitter, which is still like one of the favorite platforms, let's say, for techies, if I may use this term, to give, you know, quick information about it. So what are the major pros and cons so far, even though I know that it's impossible to list them all?
Well, I think one of the risks or the dangers that everybody's talking about quite rightly is how quickly this technology moves. And it's nothing new as such to have to regulate technologies that are in sort of development. And actually the EU already about 40 years ago or something like that, developed something they called this sort of new approach. And it's sometimes even, and now I think people have stopped calling it new, but it was called new for at least 30 years, which just meant that you focus on risks and what is technology doing, rather than making, which used to be common, say, in the 1970s or so, that you actually put in detail what technology should be used and how. And so the EU started already much before we have the kind of technology we have today to sort of try to think, so why do we need any rules, and what are they for? What are the risks? What are we trying to prevent or promote? And so, and making regulations or directives or any rules that are not technology specific, but as neutral as possible, so that when technology changes, you can still use the sort of same framework. And this is all fine and good, but we, of course, with artificial intelligence, it's made it that bit extra difficult because it's really so unpredictable. It's not like, you know, a car, for instance, where we know what the car does, and then the car does it better and better, and maybe with a different technology, but it's still essentially moving on the road from one place to another, you know, taking people or goods or something. With AI, it's almost impossible to know what exactly is it going to be doing. And so there's this danger with regulating technology that's so little known about, that maybe it will hinder development. And here there were also some fears actually by some member states that it would make EU less competitive. So fears which didn't come from actually protecting people, but protecting economies, if you wish, that, you know, that if others in the world do not have rules about AI, and then there would be lots of different new things to do with this, then the European industry would suffer. On the other hand, there's also the other fear that if these rules are too general and too vague, and there will be lots of different risks, that people will not be protected. So it's really this unknowability of AI. And then one of the things that EU, and I think rightly, it's one of the things I like with EU regulations, that it quite often focuses on increasing transparency. It's a kind of good principle of democratic rule of law states that you don't need to regulate everything. You don't need to have rules and everything, but you're trying to make it known why something applies or doesn't apply, so that ordinary people can see, okay, this is, you know, this rule is there for that reason, so I can kind of, you know, decide my behavior according to that. And here is a great challenge, as everybody knows, with AI, that it's as if we as humans may soon actually know less and less about why there is a certain consequence of something. So we kind of, we can't, as in with more traditional technology, know if we're doing A, B, and C, then the results will be such, but the results may come, you know, from as a surprise, more or less. So whether this transparency idea, which is part of the idea with the AI Act, is going to be possible is, I guess, also a bit of an open question.
You've been mentioning transparency, and we've been mentioning also the GDPR. And the GDPR is something that we have talked about also in a couple of past episodes of the Digital Government Podcast with you, actually. And I think it would be useful, first of all, for me, myself, and then second, also for the audience, to keep a little bit this parallel, let's say, you know, between, rather than the scope, the topic, and the objectives, as we said, more about the dynamic and the mechanisms, let's say, of how and what happened with the GDPR regulation, and then what instead the EU is trying to do with the AI Act. What do I mean with this is that you have already introduced at the beginning a difference between the two experiences, which I think is very, very important, because you have because you've said that, contrary to the case of the GDPR regulation, in the case of the EU AI Act, there is a bit less of a focus on this aspect of people's rights, let's say, human rights. No? One question that I would have for you then is, how do you think that then the EU AI Act still reflects, let's say, some of the values that we share within the European Union in terms of its approach towards digital innovation? Meaning, if the main focus is not about people's rights and human rights, as it was instead humans' rights, rather, as it was in the case of GDPR, the focus here, you said, it's more about on products and competitiveness. But so, what are the EU values and what is the EU perspective that is somehow feeding the creation and the development of this act?
Well, I think even if it's correct that the focus when one reads the Act is a bit different, and so then underlying the whole idea of making these rules and this kind of risk sort of categorization, still it's quite easy to see that it is there to protect people. Maybe it comes less from this sort of, let's say, more pure human rights perspective that we can have with privacy protection, but it's still there to protect us as individuals, as consumers, as citizens, because the sort of unacceptable risk for things that should not happen with AI, it includes things like, for instance, let's say toys that could affect the behavior of children, like encourage children to do illegal things or something. And here we can see that, I mean, yes, okay, there is kind of consumer protection aspect, but it's also really just this feeling that, you know, you don't play around with people's minds. And so it's the very European and very good basis for European cooperation, which is that individuals matter, that you know, persons' rights matter. And if this means sometimes that it's bad for industry or something, well, so be it. But, you know, we don't have this kind of well, there are unfortunately many negative examples in the world. I don't need to mention any, but where the kind of state interests are always sort of taking over, including economic and others. So that, I think, is quite clear that it's in that sense similar idea, that here are people need protection and these rights need protection, even if that may make life more difficult for some either governments or states. And I think that another example that from this behavioral modification is also, and which has been a great topic of discussion, is different kind of facial recognition or these kind of various tools for recognizing people. And it's possible to some extent to use them for law enforcement. And so there are some exceptions to the kind of total ban from it, or there is no total ban, rather, I should say. But still, it could, of course, be useful for the police to have us all constantly monitored. And it can even be shown, probably, that it may have a positive effect on sort of preventing crimes and so. But still, then comes these sort of human rights aspects. So it's not as if that isn't there in this act. I think it's definitely there. And I think these questions are also those where we will know much more. So we'll probably schedule already another podcast in a couple of years' time where we will see a little bit what have the guidelines been then that have been developed, the different standards that member states will develop, the guidelines on EU level, and the practice and so. But yeah, there is this approach. So I think maybe it's more correct to say that there is a kind of a practical difference between the two acts, rather than sort of this fundamental difference. And then there is another thing which perhaps in practice also is not going to matter so much, but for the GDPR, it's only binding for those who deal with Europeans' data, if we put it very generally. So, whereas for the AI Act, actually AI that may come from somewhere else and it may also be regulated. Why this difference is perhaps more theoretical is that we all know that GDPR has influenced a lot of other countries to adopt similar regulations, and you actually have to do that if you want to use European data. So most countries obviously do that anyway. And also for the AI Act, it will of course mean that the EU cannot assume jurisdiction in the whole world. So theoretically, countries could kind of say, we don't care about this and we do whatever. But that, of course, again, would mean no access to any European markets or anything like that. So in a sense, we could say that both are examples of this, what's sometimes called Brussels effect, that the EU adopts rules and then legally they are only, of course, binding for the EU, but they actually become the norm globally. So I think here it's probably, you know, if legal scholars will write about these different possibilities of affecting other countries, they could find differences. But I think most of us would just see that it's a similar idea with Europe protecting certain interests for everybody in a way.
Yeah, because I think that this last point reflects a little bit two things to take into consideration that perhaps we are reminded of, let's say, of the debate that was happening on the GDPR and what we were talking about on the topic of GDPR at a more international, meaning also extra-European level and dimension. One is that there could be some sort of a transfer, let's say, of if not laws themselves, at least in terms of like focus and action on what lawmakers, legislators, policymakers, decision makers need to tackle, let's say, or need to address on the basis of what has been already discussed within the EU, but exactly at a more international level or also like in other countries. And second, on this topic, and or better, on a similar line, so keeping the same international focus, we're also reminded of how technology obviously gets regulated and utilized also a bit depending on the context, or like framed, let's say, depending on the international context and national contexts where it is happening and moving. What do I mean with this? That countries in general can be placed on a spectrum in terms of how much they respect, observe, and essentially care about people's rights and individuals' rights. So the EU AI Act keeps this perspective a bit in a similar way as the GDPR already did, probably even more so, let's say, in the past, but takes it more, as you said, from a fundamental perspective, from the basis, let's say, the theoretical basis, if we want, that that the AI Act in the EU is aiming to keep and to consolidate. But in that sense, there was something that happened in the case of the GDPR and also of the wider media and information space, let's say, in information and communication technologies, which we have discussed a little bit back then, I remember. And at this point, since we have mentioned the topics of industry and competitiveness, I'm really interested and curious to know who are at this point, at least keeping the EU AI Act in focus, let's say, who are the critical stakeholders in the drafting and implementation of this act? Meaning, who needs to be involved? What roles do they play? And also, what you, Catherine, would recommend to effectively engage them?
Mm. Well, here, one thing, I guess, is what has already been happening, as you alluded to yourself a bit, that in this kind of long discussion, quite long. I mean, it's not that long in years, but still, with before these acts sort of came to the stage where it is now. From what I've read about this AI office that is going to be set up, then one of the ideas with that is exactly to involve different stakeholders. So it is not going to be, as I understand it, like more like a regulator, because most of that will still be at member state level, but it will be a coordinator, but not just of the member state regulators, the different bodies that have to be given this task in the member states when the act enters into force. But it will also deal with sort of contacts with industry and civil society and so on. So that is something where perhaps more than previously, like for the GDPR or other rules, the EU seems to be thinking about this from the beginning of sort of that there should be a mechanism for involving people, not just, which is always the case, that, you know, different people can send comments on legal acts or so, but to actually, you know, make this, which is going to happen then, this future development of guidelines, and so something where you actually reach out to industry. I think who should be involved? I think it's very important to involve the industry. And there are, said in the beginning, both of us said it, that there are different forms of guidelines and other rules about AI. So there haven't been much legislation made, but there have been sort of voluntary guidelines, and those who deal with this have in different ways sort of already issued a number of sort of ideas or principles and so on. And they are very concerned. And I think one thing that I find personally, been sort of working with law and technology for decades, but that is different now, is that quite often we've seen how people who get sort of nervous with new technology are the ones who don't really like new technologies. Like there's a kind of an attitude maybe for different reasons. And often it's also combined with perhaps not understanding the technologies very well. But when it comes to AI, some of the people that have come out with warnings, if you wish, and also with sort of trying to develop rules, are the very people who develop it. So, I mean, they definitely understand it. They understand it much better than I do, for sure. And presumably also you cannot say that they're against it. They're the ones who've invented it. So I think this feeling of unknowable risks is a very real one. It has nothing to do with not knowing the technology. And that means that the people who are the ones who are really developing this, which mainly then are in different private companies, they really need to be involved in this every step, because if, as I say, this is difficult to know what will be the next step. If regulation looks to be completely wrong because either it's too restrictive or it doesn't really deal with the risks, then these people need to be involved. So then another thing that one should not forget is, of course, this presumably extremely wide uses of this technology, for instance, also for the law enforcement or military and players like that. And this, if we go back to a little bit what we just talked about with the human rights aspect of it and all the sort of ways in which technology can infringe on daily rights. And so then this is another community that needs to be involved, because they will be able to say what they want, and then we can see how much of that can we give them, kind of thing. So I think this is, and then yes, it's always nice with civil society being involved and so, but I think here it really needs to be also the business. I mean, that it wouldn't do any good if the regulation was divorced from the realities of the technological development, because I think there would be so many different loopholes to avoid regulation if it becomes too rigid, let's say.
And I would say that in this sense, at least in the European Union, personally, I have the feeling that governments and civil, let's say that if we talk about a triad, let's say, like of governments, businesses, meaning the private sector, and civil society organizations, I would say that government and civil society organizations have all the interest to be, quote unquote, on the same side, let's say, of this debate. Obviously, first of all, because we are talking about mostly fully democratic countries, as we are saying, like in the European Union. But at the same time, civil society organizations, even though we are talking about mostly fully democratic countries, obviously cannot simply delegate, let's say, the stronger negotiating position in striking a balance, let's say, between the needs of citizens, or better, like the rights of citizens and the needs of business. They cannot delegate this entirely to governments, first of all, because governments are subject to change, meaning political change, and that must always be taken into account, especially with all the elections that we have coming up in the next year. But then at the same time, obviously, civil society organizations need to have this level of heightened attention, let's say, and care to make sure exactly that what is a fundamental principle that somehow, let's say, underlines the development of the EU AI Act, which, as we said, is keeping in mind people's rights, then also gets effectively implemented and observed. Which is something that I remember that already in the case of the GDPR, there were quite some articles, debates, interventions that were a bit, I would say, annoyed, let's say, or maybe bothered even a little bit by the extent and the depth of the regulation. But then after it came into force, at least from a citizen perspective, I could say, well, I mean, too much ado about nothing, let's say, a bit too much noise. But in the case of the EU AI Act and of artificial intelligence, I personally have the feeling that we will definitely need some incentives or mechanisms, let's say, that we need to put in place in order to encourage compliance with the EU AI Act among developers and users. But what do you think that these mechanisms or incentives? First of all, do you think that they are needed at all based on the experience that we had with GDPR? And second, what do you think that these could be?
Well, I think just to very briefly first add another reason for this cooperation is, of course, also to just get the expertise, because here is really like complicated questions, and the expertise is maybe more in the private sector than the public one. So it's also like co-opting simply the sort of knowledge of experts, which is why there should be this kind of expert panel or something, whatever it would be called, in this EU office as well. I think also another difference maybe, and you're absolutely right, there was a lot of ado about nothing really perhaps with the GDPR, although it has, of course, meant also some extra burdens for small companies and so, but generally it sort of went easier than was thought. And there was a lot of negative discussions. Here, I think for companies as well, one difference is that there's relatively much pressure actually from people to have some kind of regulation on AI. Maybe not always correctly, but simply because there's so much talk about it, and it's something which perhaps worries people more than protection of privacy, which a lot of people will say, well, you know, I have nothing to hide, why should I be so worried about it? And it's a little bit perhaps that civil society and activists had to try to get people to understand, you know, privacy is a value, even if you today feel you have no secrets or something, you know. But with AI, there's quite a lot of feeling that, you know, what is it really? And so I think maybe that's one incentive for companies to try to participate in this, because they can then say that, you know, there are rules and we are following these rules, and you know, this we're doing this and so. I think other incentives, it's very difficult. It's a very good question. I don't think I have a good answer, because I don't think that fines and things like that are really going to be a solution. Again, because I think we will see few cases where somebody absolutely violates some rule, because they cannot be so specific. Maybe it will be easier in the future, but generally here is, I think, few things where at least sort of, let's say, more normal, responsible companies or other actors would do something concretely exactly against these rules. I mean, like, for instance, I mentioned this example with the toy who can influence the child to do something illegal. I don't think we'll see lots of manufacturers making such toys or something like that, you know. I hope so, at least. So it will more be a question of the sort of gray zone. So I don't think the punishment route is the really correct one. But on the other hand, of course, the fact to have rules, hopefully, is an incentive. But I sort of think that this kind of multi-stakeholder form of going forward is better. And it's not so naive as maybe some people will think to talk about that, because we have seen in this whole sort of internet era regulation, we've actually seen more efforts like that than sort of binding laws that have been very effective. So it's not as if you need to just think that everybody wants to be nice and that's why they follow the rules, but there is this whole sort of combination of pressure from users, from the consumers, risks of sanctions, sort of like just being unpopular. I mean, this is kind of like, yeah. So I think at least for some time, this is maybe the sort of best way. And if I may just say one thing that I like about this regulation is actually this risk categorization, because in the earlier discussions, and everything here is so new, so earlier discussions were only a few years ago, there were those who sort of said that AI should be seen as something for which there is strict liability, which is the legal term for those who sort of do something are liable regardless of if they do something wrong or not, which is what we see for some outer space activities and some nuclear activities. And so where it's just seen to be so risky that it doesn't matter if you do everything right, you're still responsible if something goes wrong and you're liable to pay compensation and so on. And this approach would have been very bad, I think, for AI, because it is as opposed to these things I just mentioned, it's not something that's always a huge, big thing. It's not like space or nuclear, where you know you're doing something, you know, with big risks and you're spending lots of money to do something. AI can be in all sorts of things, and it's not always that risky. So I think we already see a better approach here, that it's not like we cannot lump this whole technology into one and then regulate it just like that, but actually look a bit at, so what in particular cases are the reasons for regulating, so what are the risks? And I'm hoping that this will emphasize this also, that industry and other players have an interest in, because if only to kind of, you know, put yourself in the correct category and not the too risky one.
Catherine, thanks a lot for this overview. And during this last answer, you actually answered a couple of the questions that were just coming up to my mind, like just as responses, like the one, for example, of could this like multi-stakeholder view of different actors coming, relevant actors like coming together, let's say, even though they have different interests, let's say, in how the AI, business interests, I would say, in how the AI should be developed and in what direction, like how to harmonize, let's say, all of this. And in a way, in the end, manage actually to strike a balance between business interests, government's duty to safeguard the privacy and the rights of individuals, and at the same time, individuals themselves need, wish, and right, as I said, to exactly not be subject to practices that involve the use of AI in a way too invasive way. But I would wrap up this episode now with one question, something that we have that is maybe like rather more general as compared to exactly the nitty-gritty aspects of this EU AI Act that we have addressed. But it is something that we both have mentioned in the first half of this episode, which is, you said that, for example, one of the provisions, let's say, that are set to enter into force, let's say, furthest in time, like in 36 months, for example, from the moment of approval of the AI regulation, obviously tells us how many are 36 months. It's 3 years, basically. So something that we have mentioned, but we haven't really addressed, and I'm not even sure that we can actually address it, but it would be a good note, let's say, to end this episode, is how do you think that the EU at this point can ensure that the AI Act manages to actually keep pace with the rapid advancements in AI technology? And what do I mean with this is, is this a little bit of a make or break type of moment? Do you think that somehow there is the perception that this is the big moment to talk about this topic, because then we won't likely have another chance as deep and as focused to address it?
This is a very good question, a very big question. And as I already sort of alluded to a bit, I think in my own mind as well, I'm with this new technology for the first time, I feel this, that it's really so difficult to know what is going to happen. And there may be something completely different we don't even yet imagine. And so that changes everything. But with all that uncertainty, I think at least we could say that now is quite a good time to regulate this, because it's more known even among the general public, and there are more uses of AI for like sort of regular people, if we say it like that, than only when they started discussing this act in the EU as well. So we were really like with the launch of the sort of ChatGPT and all the other sort of large language models that came, a little bit more than a year ago only, that it became sort of widely known. So now I think now is a time when it's possible to focus on what looks reasonable, what kind of looks that should be regulated. I think the only way to avoid this becoming obsolete is really this, that focus is put on creating different forms of guidelines, on having a forum for discussion, on having ways of engaging the community, like what you asked about earlier, so that it's seen as a sort of a basis on which things will develop. Maybe in a year's time we'll see it was completely wrong. But it somehow seems like this approach is trying at least to combine flexibility with sort of a little bit putting the foot down and saying, okay, now we already have so much of this and we are going to try to put this into a sort of rule of law framework.
Katrin Nyman-Metcalf, thanks a lot for joining us today for this episode of the podcast.
Thank you.
And thanks a lot also to all our audience for tuning in once again. Thanks for sticking with us throughout this overview of what the European Union is doing in terms of attempting at regulating the use of artificial intelligence. And stay tuned in for all the next episodes, because now it's coming the time of, somehow it already arrived, but we're going to do it more and more so in the next weeks. And it is to introduce the speakers of the next e-governance conference 2024, which I shall remind everyone that is happening in May, between May 21st and 23rd, in Tartu, but also in a hybrid form, so online as well. And in order to find all information about it, meaning program, topics, speakers, tickets, you simply have to head to 2024.egovconference.ee, where you will be able to find all information about it. That's it also from your host for today, and have a nice day.
This podcast is brought to you by the eGovernance Academy. Tune in next time.